WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll be Living for the City with Michael G. Haskins, yours truly. I kind of like that. It's actually 67 degrees, and yeah, it's sunny. Sunny here in New York City. Looking out in Brooklyn, yep, it's sunny. Thanks so much for tuning in. Stay young. Keep your wheels in motion. I kind of like that. It's 10 a.m. here in New York, and coming up next is Eco Logic.
Paradise put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome! Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for Wednesday, September 20th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Stuff goes into landfills that could be repaired if the manufacturers allowed it, instead of making you buy new stuff all the time. Today, we'll be talking with Bill O'Reilly, with Kevin O'Reilly of the Repair Association. Also, repair cafes, government insurance for the nuclear industry, an analysis of ecofascism, and the Farm Bill.
Stuff goes into landfills. And
yes,
but we do have good news. Here is a trend that is healthy for the environment and your finances. Repair cafes. This particular version was born in Amsterdam in 2009 and brought to New York, New Paltz by volunteer organizer John Wackman in 2013. Many more repair cafes, fix-it events, and the like have been hosted in many communities. In upstate New York, Repair Cafe of Hudson Valley and Catskills is a consortium of program organizers who support the work of repair in their communities. Here in Manhattan, there is a Fixers Collective event this evening on West 27th Street. Look for it on Facebook, 37th Street. On June 17th, Ecologic Bill Paola of Time's Up joined us in Ecologic talking about his efforts with pipe repair. You can go to the archives to find the June 17th show. Some reasons to get involved or attend a repair cafe: to transform our throwaway economy one beloved item at a time, to reduce how much stuff goes into the waste stream, to preserve traditional repair know-how and skills and pass them on, to show the people who have this knowledge that they are valued, to feed our curiosity about the way things work and have fun, to foster community sustainability and resilience. To learn more or get involved as an organizer or fixer, contact frcwrepaircafe@gmail.com. That's frcwrepaircafe@gmail.com.
When the nuclear power industry started, it could not get any insurance. A severe accident could bankrupt a utility or an insurance company. So the industry went to the government, and they created the Price-Anderson Act. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists said, "The chief problem with the Price-Anderson Act is the difference in how the law affects the public and the nuclear firms. In view of federal preemption of nuclear licensing, the public has essentially no say in the siting of a nuclear power plant and so must accept the associated accident risk. Nuclear vendors, however, are freed from all liability for off-site consequences of a nuclear accident and so have nothing to worry about, either financially or legally. A return to stricter requirements on containment design would fit with the current interest in smaller reactors. Unfortunately, the U.S. nuclear industry and the Energy Department are moving in the opposite direction. They argue in unison that the putative safety advantages of smaller nuclear plants should lead to even lower containment requirements, and they hope cheaper plants. But this argument amounts to prioritizing remote nuclear vendors' shareholders over citizens in the surrounding area. Lost is the notion of continual improvement in nuclear reactor safety. The Price-Anderson Act also gives the nuclear industry the nuclear hazard exclusion clause. We can confidently tell you that your home or your car insurance policy specifically excludes nuclear accidents from any coverage. All insurance policies have this, thanks to the Price-Anderson Act. You cannot buy private insurance for a nuclear accident. It's against the law. From NIRS, the Nuclear Information Resource Service, Price-Anderson has a liability cap well below the compensation needed to cover most nuclear accident consequences. Left to market forces, the nuclear industry is uninsurable and financially non-viable. With the Act, the public is denied financial protection from the enormous health costs and economic losses from a catastrophic accident. No other U.S. industry has been given the insurance exemptions and protections that the nuclear industry has been given."
Again, from NIRS, "The Price-Anderson Act is a fairly complicated system with nuclear utilities as a group purchase a small level of insurance for accidents. The ability to hold corporations fully financially liable as a deterrent to reckless business practices is a cornerstone of civil law. A deteriorating nuclear power plant provided with a full liability exemption is more likely to take shortcuts that pit profit margins against safety margins as a routine course of business."
Haltech?
If Price-Anderson were not reauthorized, existing reactors would still be covered by its current provisions. The only reason to extend the commercial provisions of the Act is to encourage the construction of new reactors." Damn.
"The maximum insurance available under Price-Anderson is not even a tenth of the cost of an accident like Fukushima Daiichi. Any overage would need special congressional approval, new taxpayer dollars not paid by reactor owners, who are thus protected from the full cost of the damage caused by their facilities."
We had intended to go into detail about ecofascism this week, but we'll save it for next week. It's too important a topic to rush.
Now we have our guest, Kevin Riley. Kevin O'Reilly from the Repair Association. Kevin, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me on. I work with the Repair Association, which is a nonprofit that pushes for legislation and change that advances independent repair. So for the past 5 years, I've been the campaign director with the Public Interest Research Group, advancing right to repair in particular, which is a simple idea and an important idea that, you know, if you own something, you should be able to fix it.
How did we get into this mess in the first place?
It's a great question, right? You know, I remember even my dad just being frustrated when we got a new TV or something like that. He'd run into some sort of issue and shake his fist in the air and say, "Man, they don't make stuff like they used to." And That's a fact of the matter, right? It's not just, maybe the more curmudgeonly among us who are saying that. It's as we've gone and moved towards, more and more devices that are run on software and run on electronics, we've seen manufacturers use that software to either lock down independent repair, or in some cases, they have put in digital locks that prevent independent fixers from being able to go in and make the changes needed to make their stuff last longer, right? And unfortunately, the fact that comes from that is that we throw away so much electronic waste that we really shouldn't be, right? So in America, we throw away 416,000 cell phones every single day.
Wow.
Give that number again.
416,000 cell phones every single day.
Wow. I can't even imagine what size that pile would be.
Yeah, I'm sure it would fill up the Empire State Building. I wouldn't be surprised. So, it's just a ton of waste, and it's too bad because often those devices that are getting pitched, they have just something simple wrong with them. Maybe the battery isn't holding a charge like it used to, or the screen is cracked, right? Those kind of things are simple repairs. Lithium ion batteries, fact of the matter is those things only last 18 to 36 months. So you need to be able to fix them. You need to be able to replace them. But because of the software that's involved, because manufacturers do things like glue parts in rather than fasten them with a good old fashioned screw, it's nearly impossible in many cases to get those parts out, and you just end up having to pitch the whole thing.
Yeah, that happened with me. I had a MacBook that I had repaired, and they had to, it was to repair the speaker. They had to repair like the whole bottom half of the machine. It was hundreds of dollars. Crazy.
It doesn't seem like it should be that, right? The part itself, yeah. I'm sure it didn't cost much more than, $10, $20, $30.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, you had mentioned that Napster is connected to all of this. Explain what Napster had to do with fixing your cell phone or your tractor.
Absolutely, which this is kind of a crazy bit of a story. So buckle in, everybody.
Let's explain Napster as well.
Yeah, right. Back in the late 1990s, Napster was the way that you could download music online for free, right? And, that was a problem for artists. They weren't getting their royalties. They weren't making their money, right? If you downloaded, Hit Me Baby One More Time, Britney Spears wasn't getting her chunk. So Congress passed a bill in the late 1990s, in 1999, called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which essentially made it so that producers of copyrightable content of movies and music and those kind of things could attach digital locks that to their content so that you had to pay to be able to pick it, right? So that kind of is similar to and why we saw the rise of iTunes, right? Where you could pay 99 cents for a song, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, the way that language was written, it was so broad to say essentially that these digital locks, bypassing them for purposes that weren't about violating somebody's copyright or stealing somebody's song or content or anything like that, was still a copyright crime. So to this day, it's still the case that, for many products, picking a digital lock, so to speak, for the purposes of just fixing the device is a copyright crime. Now, this is a crazy idea, right? Repair is not a crime. Repair should not be a crime. It definitely shouldn't be a copyright crime. And that's actually
something back to the state it was in. It's not right.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a simple act. It's you bought a device to fulfill a certain purpose. Mm-hmm. When it's not fulfilling that purpose, you should be able to restore it to its original state so that it is right.
Yeah.
And this is something that the Copyright Office has kind of stated over and over again. There's a little bit arcane process, but every 3 years, they go and review the different types of equipment that are held under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And they can grant exemptions, and they have for nearly all types of equipment, from your laptops to, tractors, to medical equipment, to game consoles, all these kind of things. They've granted exemptions from the Digital Copyright Act, the DMCA, but the fact of the matter is that's not good enough, right? It only allows the owner of that device to pick the digital lock. The problem is that in many cases, people don't necessarily have the technical know-how to do that themselves, right? They can't hire someone to do it for them. If you've figured out a way to bypass it, you can't make a tool that you would then sell to others so that they could do it themselves, right? And that kind of tool would be something like, you know, if you walk into, an O'Reilly Auto Parts, no relation, so that's not a problem. and buy a Snap-on, reader that you plug into the OBD port in your car to get the diagnostic readings, right? That's the kind of tool that the DMCA is preventing us from creating for all sorts of other kinds of equipment. So there's actually a real big push. There's been legislation in the past to reform Section 1201 of the DMCA, which is the particular kind of meat of the problem here, that would make it so that repair and security research are no longer a copyright crime. We think that's a really critical piece of legislation for Congress to pass. So we are going to be, pushing really hard over the coming year to see what we can do to make that happen.
What do you want listeners to do to help?
Well, there's a few things you can do. First of all, you can go to repair.org/standup and add your name and reach out to both your state legislators as well as, your folks in D.C., and tell them that, you think repair shouldn't be a crime and that they should be passing right to repair legislation to make sure that you can fix your stuff.
Wow.
That's repair.org/stand-up.
That's right.
Yes.
Yay, Sally. I remember when COVID first happened and the only medical recourse anybody had was a ventilator. And there weren't enough ventilators. And I remember hearing over and over again, there aren't enough ventilators. And then come to find out, it's not because there weren't enough ventilators. It's that they could not make them work because the copyright law in this case said, no, ventilators only work for a few years, and now they're junk.
And if it's broken, you got to go find the authorized guy to repair it. And there were not enough authorized guys and too many ventilators.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so this highlights kind of how there are multiple aspects of this problem of repair restrictions, right? On the one half, there's the copyright aspect that we talked about. But on the other, in part because of that copyright aspect, manufacturers of all types of equipment restrict access to the materials we need to fix ventilators and tractors and cell phones, right? In some cases, that's the software, and that's where the digital locks come in. But also, often they won't provide you with the basic repair manual, right? They won't provide you with access to buy the right replacement parts. And all of those different aspects mean that you've got to go back to their authorized technician and pay whatever they want to charge you in order to fix it because they're the only person who can do it. You've got to wait however they want to make you wait because they're the only person that can do it, right? And COVID-19, the outbreak of COVID, especially back in, March of 2020, we saw the effects of this, right? On the one hand, yes, ventilators were going into around-the-clock use, right? We were having to pull old ones that were in the strategic stockpile off the shelf, make sure they were good to go, and put them in. And the fact of the matter is the manufacturers of these devices didn't have enough technicians to go around. They also didn't want them to be traveling from COVID hotspot to COVID hotspot, spreading the virus in the process. And so it really brought to the fore the problem that this has for our medical, our medical industry and our healthcare system. And so
the prices we pay.
Absolutely.
And, it would be so easy for a big hospital to have one or two technicians on staff to be able to repair all their equipment. Right.
Many hospitals do, right? And I've worked, during my time with PERG, I worked with hundreds of what are called, they call them biomeds or biomedical repair technicians, right? Who are on site, whose job is to, keep the trains on time, so to speak, when it comes to medical equipment. They were being locked out, right? I surveyed 222 of them when I was with PERG. And
PERG is a public interest research group.
That's right. That's right. And it was pretty astonishing to just see how these folks were being locked out, right? And I'll start by saying there's nothing inherently better about the manufacturer technician. In many cases, the folks that either work at the hospital or work at a third party, they are, you know, trained. They go to the same schools that the OEMs go to. Often they've worked for an OEM in the past, right?
OEM, excuse me,
means original equipment manufacturer. So they worked for the manufacturer in the past. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, something that also the FDA has looked into the issue to see if there are any differences in safety. And what they said is, you know, very resoundingly, one of their conclusions was that the continued availability of third-party service is critical to the functioning of the U.S. healthcare system. And so, you know, back in June 2020, we surveyed these 222 biomedical repair technicians, and, you know, a huge chunk, I think, you know, something like 30% had equipment that they, in their hospital, that they couldn't use, they couldn't fix because of these restrictions. So they were basically just collecting dust at a moment where we needed to have all the equipment possible in use and available to save people's lives, right? And it was really kind of disappointing. I mean, there were some manufacturers that, you know, PERG did a lot of work to collect hundreds of, you know, more than 100,000 petitions to deliver to the manufacturers of these ventilators to say, hey, you need to make more of these repair materials available. And some of them did, right? Like Vyaire, Medtronic, a few of these companies did open up access to repair materials. But there were so many that didn't, and there are so many other pieces of equipment in the hospital that were needed to treat COVID patients and folks with other affliction as well. So, you know, it was a little bit disappointing to see this moment when everybody should have been coming together to save as many lives as possible when it comes to, you know, making sure medical equipment was up and running, and still, in some cases, profit held the priority.
It's interesting that that ITs are valued. They want their computers running. Every organization, every corporation has their IT department.
Information technology.
Thank you. Well, a lot of IT is almost a very common thing in this world, but yes, information technology technicians. And so they should have a repair technology technicians on hand. That's crazy.
It bugs me what it does to the cost of the healthcare system, because so many people can't afford healthcare, period. And then you find out it's not necessarily the hospital's fault, because they keep having to buy these really expensive equipment over and over and over again.
It's absolutely true. And it's something that, you know, we're seeing leaders in Congress as well, on both sides of the aisle address, right? Representative Neil Dunn of Florida, who's a Republican, he testified in a hearing related to this and said, you know, he's a urologist, he's a, you know, an oncologist, he works with this equipment. He's like, listen, I think this was cooked up in a C-suite somewhere where they realized they're, you know, leaving a huge chunk of money on the table if they just service their own stuff. So he understands it as well as anybody else, that we need to be able to fix our stuff and that profit shouldn't be the priority.
And excuse us, Kevin, that was a great time, great line for a segue. We need to take a short break.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. We'll be back with our guest, Kevin O'Reilly, in a few minutes, but something all producers need to do is raise money to keep WBAI on the air.
Absolutely. Independent media is at a crossroads, and to survive and thrive, it needs people power. With activism, we're usually talking about your time. It is so important to show up at events such as last Sunday's march, to sign petitions, to write to elected officials. But activism with people's media needs support in terms of your donated dollars. Thanks to you and your fellow members who care about free speech, we have eked out enough to keep the station on the air. But we still need you to continue to helping keep us on the air. The bills don't stop. The best way WBAI has found to reliably know that the bills will get paid is to have more BAI buddy pledges. But any donation, anytime, helps us in a big way. Remember, tell them you're donating in the name of Ecologic. You can have more than one BAI buddy pledge, so maybe $10 a month for Ecologic and $10 a month for another wonderful show. That way, we and the station know that we have friends.
We need the transmitter to keep broadcasting our programming, and that means paying the rent. Let's call this a WBAI rent party. Send in your contribution to add to the pot. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
There is no other station like WBAI. We have longer, more in-depth interviews than almost all mainstream programs, as you're hearing now with Kevin O'Reilly. We have free speech radio. We don't bend to corporate advertisers at BAI or at other Pacifica stations, as our funds come from listeners like you.
Back in October 2019, we had a world without BAI for a few days, and it seemed like forever. Such a shock to find silence when I turned on the radio. We don't want that to ever happen again. And then there was some time with repeat programming from California, but where were our favorite local programs? Oh, it was awful.
Did you become a BAI member by June 30th? If so, have you voted in the current election yet? You can vote until September 30th at 11:59 p.m. Don't wait until the last minute, though. And we need all of our eligible members to participate. Please, it is very important that we get a quorum. We have about 2 weeks and need more votes. Is yours missing? All voting members should have gotten their ballots by email. You can search your email by invitations@mail.electionbuddy.com. Reminders go out every Tuesday. If you did not get a ballot, request one on elections.pacifica.org. That's elections.pacifica.org. View candidates there, too. If you don't have access to the internet, leave a message at 213-635-9363. That's 213-635-9363. Voting now is as important to saving the station as were all the efforts in October 2019 when the station was shut down without notice by a rogue faction of Pacifica. There is voting almost every year, so becoming a member is always a good thing. Please send in your $25. This really is your radio station.
You who listen to WBAI have access to information that your friends and family who don't listen don't have. You have facts they don't have. You hear experts they don't hear. You know about events they don't know about. This is your station, your programming. Be part of it and please show your love by donating in the name of Ecologic. Go to the WBAI archives and listen to an episode of Ecologic that you missed or want to hear again. www.ecoradio.org has a list of the last 3 years of Ecologic and direct links to hear them. ecoradio.org.
When you choose to become our Ecologic BAI buddy, you're giving us the reliable source of support that we very much need and can depend on, just as you can depend on WBAI. Paying just $10 or $15 a month, and more would be even more helpful, you get not only four Ecologic programs, but also more than 700 hours of programming each month from which to choose. How much time do you spend listening to WBAI each month? Do you listen every day, several times a week, to your favorite shows? We're grateful that you choose to spend your time with WBAI. You decide on an amount that's right for you to donate each month. Join us as an Ecologic buddy at give2wbai.org or by calling 212-209-2950.
And if you want, you can send a check or a money order for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 318 Atlantic Avenue. 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217. See, mistakes make you listen better. Go ahead.
We're sure that you're enjoying our talk with Kevin O'Reilly, and we'll be back with him soon. To support programs like this, call 212-209-2950 or go to ecologic.wbai.org to donate or browse through our other premiums. We have a DVD of the Raging Grannies, who you heard here last week, with Pete Seeger at Clearwater. Yours for a donation of just $40. Any donation of $25 or more makes you a voting member of WBAI. Many people find it easier to budget small recurring donations, so please consider that. We'd love to have you as an Ecologic BAI buddy for $10 or $15 each month, or more.
Any amount you choose. Bill Steele's song Garbage was a folk music standard in the 80s and 90s. Here is Pete Seeger with the verse that he added. Feel free to sing along with the radio.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage, garbage, garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac, winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, turns it into smog, then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage, garbage. We're filling up the sky with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage? Garbage, 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 garbage. Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles with the evening news while the kids do homework with a TV in one ear. While Superman for the thousandth time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, dutifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the papers there's a piece about the mayor's middle name. He gets it read in time to watch the all-star bingo game. Oh, garbage, garbage, garbage. We're filling up our minds with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to read, and there's nothing left to need, and there's nothing left to watch, and there's nothing left to touch, and there's nothing left to walk upon, nothing left to talk upon, nothing left to see, and nothing left to be but in Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. The plastic's mixed in giant vats from sun conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the earth or strip mined from the land. And if you question anything, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy of garbage. Their stocks and their bonds all garbage. What will they do when their system goes to smash? There's no value to their cash. There's no money to be made, but there's a world to be repaid. Their kids will read in history books about financiers and other crooks and feudalism and slavery and nukes and all their knavery. To history's dustbin they're consigned, amend with any other kinds of garbage.
That was Pete Seeger singing Bill Steele's Garbage.
Did you hear our show last week about Pete Seeger versus the un-Americans? Whether you did or not, you're sure to find new info about Pete Seeger and the McCarthy era. Ed Renahan's book can be yours for a donation of $45. So go to ecologic.wbii.org.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. We're trying to reduce the number of those trucks of garbage. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. We're back with Kevin O'Reilly.
So we mentioned tractors briefly, and I don't know how many of our city folks realize just how much those tractors cost and how often those farmers have to buy them.
It's a huge investment for these farmers, right? And this is a big investment because it's a matter of their livelihood. So right. These tractors can run, you know, anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million. So farmers often literally have to take a mortgage out for this equipment. And the fact of the matter is, again, it comes down to not getting access to all the repair materials they need, particularly the software, because these massive machines now run on a ton of software that, you know, at least the idea and the intent behind them is to help farmers maximize their yields. But the fact of the matter is now they don't have the software, so they can't fix it when they need to. They've got to go back to, you know, the John Deere or Case IH dealership to have their technician make the fix. And this delay, it often leads to huge delays of anywhere from hours to days to sometimes weeks or a month or more. One farmer I worked with, his name's Jared Wilson from Missouri. He had a case in which his fertilizer spreader went down right at the beginning, right kind of as he was prepping for planting season.
Oh, yeah. And
he was unable to fix it. He couldn't figure out what the problem was because he didn't have access to the right diagnostics. He hauled it in to the dealership and it sat there for 32 days
before
he was able to finally get it fixed. At the end of it all, there was a problem with, you know, a hydraulic valve that he believes if he had, you know, the ability to diagnose that problem, then a hydraulic diagram, he could have fixed it himself in a matter of a day. So that was time lost. That was days that he couldn't get seed in the ground, which affects at the end of the day how much he grows and how much money he makes, right? His livelihood. So when I, you know, at PERG, I did a report that found that these kind of repair restrictions